This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Week 8 is upon us. Dogs are barking, by the way, on Tuesday night. Conference USA. That is a conference wide open as Western Kentucky was undefeated and then get absolutely destroyed by Florida International at home. So the CUSA not making a whole lot of sense. Please, you know what does make sense? Rating and reviewing to this podcast. Give us a 5-star review if you don't mind. It really helps us out in those iTunes rankings. And if you haven't done so already, please do subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, and up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. There. So we'll have another episode on Thursday. Matt Newmans and I will run through our favorite plays of the week, as we always do, and always look forward to that. Wes Reynolds, fresh off of his trip to Autzen Stadium, he will join us coming up in just a little bit, and we'll check in with Brett Ciancia of Pick Six Previews. Always love checking out his Pick Six Plus account now. Great packet of information and 85 pages of just great data coming your way if you are subscribed to that. So checking in with Brett here in just a little bit. I did want to hit on, in the open, it's going to be a short open because we got two guests today, some of the situational spots this week. And if you know me, I love my situational spots. We did a whole podcast over the summer looking at some of the situational angles, and certainly some of them have come through with Memphis beating Arkansas outright in that crazy game in late September from a situational standpoint against Arkansas. Maryland didn't get the win but got the cover against Washington in what was a really tricky spot for the Huskies. So a couple jumped out to me this week, and I wanted just to run through them with you. And once again, as I always say, these aren't auto bets, but just spots that I like to keep an eye on. And one of them is Oklahoma going on the road to South Carolina. And I have not bet this game yet, and I don't know if I will, because South Carolina offense is that bad. But man, is this a tricky spot for Boomer Sooner, right? Where you have the Red River. Everyone all week, we talked about it. It felt like every single episode, the health of John Mateer. And ultimately, he does play. He doesn't play effectively. And now you have to go on the road to South Carolina. Haven't really heard about the health of John Mateer all this week. He's going to play, you would assume. But that being said, how much wear and tear did that thumb take a week ago? Then on the flip side, you've got South Carolina. And this South Carolina team offensively has been dreadful this year. And Lenora Sellers is kind of being asked to do everything for South Carolina. And this is also worth noting, a bit of a revenge spot here for Oklahoma, as they lost at home to South Carolina last year, 35-9. So this is a bit of a stinky line, a little bit of short line here under a touchdown. Williams-Bryce, it's an early game. If it was night, maybe I'd be more inclined to look at South Carolina. But I do think this is a sandwich spot for Oklahoma for sure. I discussed it on VSiN Primetime in the Murray Delicatessen at Oklahoma off the Texas game. Ole Miss next week at home. And now you got to travel to South Carolina to take on this Gamecocks team that has been very underwhelming so far. And, you know, you look at the Pick 6 Plus preview that is out there, courtesy of our guy Brett Ciancia, and you look at some of the numbers that South Carolina has, man, offensively, yowzas. Adjusted offense per play, adjusted per opponent, 64th out of 68 Power 5 or Power 4 teams in rushing offense, 28th in rushing offense. A whole lot of red in the offensive column. Not ideal, especially going up against an Oklahoma defense that is a whole lot of green. So how is Oklahoma scoring, or excuse me, South Carolina scoring? Certainly a concern there. A couple other spots that I wanted to highlight this particular week here in the open, just from a situational standpoint. Texas also kind of in a tricky spot, right? You get that win, big win, you're jubilant. And now you got to go on the road to Kentucky. Kentucky's coming off a bye. We'll talk about this game here in just a minute with Wes. But I think Texas, you know, off of that big win, are they back? Texas is back, folks. Hashtag Joe Tessitore. Texas plus 13, or excuse me, minus 13. If they were plus 13, I think I would be all over Texas Spirit. Texas laying 13 now against Kentucky. It's been a tough year for Mark Stoops, but they are always game for one of these tricky home spots, right? Kentucky, maybe someone to monitor as a spot here against Texas. Another spot, how about Pitt? They go down to Florida State. Very impressive win for the Pitt Panthers. It's been a nightmare year for the Syracuse Orange. And Pitt has since they've turned to their freshman quarterback, Mason Heinschel. I think it's Heinschel. I messed it up the first couple of times. But he's been great. Over 300 yards passing in both of his starts. Boston College is terrible, but still going on the road at Doak, getting that victory, running for 64 yards. I think this is an interesting one. And look, Narduzzi, he is usually due for a bad spot here. He will get his team up for big games at Florida State. Pretty big game, double-digit dog. Now you're a double-digit favorite heading up to Syracuse, and they're coming off a bye. Obviously, it's been a rough year for Syracuse. I'll give you a couple more from Syracuse from a situational standpoint. Northwestern, off of the win over Penn State as a 21-point underdog. They're back at home, but they're laying 3.5 against Purdue. This is one I have bet. I am in on Purdue, plus the 3.5. I'm sure we'll discuss this one quite a bit tomorrow, but I think that is a prime letdown spot for Northwestern. And then two more real quickly. One, I don't have the guts to do, but the other, I think I will. South Florida plays Memphis next week, folks. This is a massive game. You look at the odds right now at DraftKings, the favorite to make the college football playoff out of the G5 is Memphis. The second favorite, South Florida. They are scheduled to meet next week in Memphis. But do we get the old look-ahead spot here for both of these teams? Last week, I'll give you an example. Old Dominion and James Madison, they play this week. It's a massive game in the Sun Belt. Problem was, they both had inferior opponents in front of them last week. Guess what happened? Neither covered, and one of them, Old Dominion, got smoked as a 14.5-point favorite on the road at Marshall. So Memphis goes on the road to UAB. I can't do it. I know Trent Dilfer just got fired. I know it is a great spot to back UAB. I don't know if I can get there yet. That is an ugly, ugly dog. But the other one, Florida Atlantic. I think this is a sneaky sandwich spot here for South Florida. Think about last week. Friday night, they go to Denton. They're a slight underdog against North Texas. And they go out and they beat the Mean Green in front of a packed house. They proved, hey, North Texas, that's cool. You're 5-0. Get out of our way. We're going to take care of business here. And then next week, of course, you've got to take on Memphis. Where are they at for this spot against Florida Atlantic? By the way, highest total of the year, Florida Atlantic and South Florida. Right now, the number sitting at 73.5. I think Florida Atlantic catching 21.5 with that Zach Kittley offense that we've talked about a bunch of times. I think this could be a spot to back Florida Atlantic, an ugly dog here, catching 21.5 points. Their defense is not good. That is an understatement. They are bad defensively. But I backed this Florida Atlantic team a couple weeks ago against Memphis, and that was a rough one because they were only down 5 in the fourth quarter. Granted, they were at home, but then the dam broke and they completely fell apart and they lost that game to Memphis. Since then, though, they've rattled off a couple wins in a row. And last week, albeit against a horrendous UAB team, they were able to put up almost 500 yards of offense, threw for 345. I think this team, when you look at the offense led by Caden Vellkamp, could be capable to keep things close against South Florida in a very, very tricky spot. All right, one thing to note before we get out of here, and we'll talk more about this game coming up here in just a little bit. Pictures were coming out of practice in Tempe on Wednesday regarding Sam Levitt. Sam Levitt did not play last week against Utah, and that was a massive downgrade from Sam Levitt to Jeff Sims, and Utah absolutely dominated Arizona State. Now you've seen the market start to shift a little bit here on Arizona State against Texas Tech. They're at home, and the reason is Sam Levitt is practicing. He doesn't have a wrap on that foot. Now, there was one tweet out there that said they were not allowed to take video, only pictures. So keep that in mind. A little bit of gamesmanship here. Obviously, this Texas Tech team, we'll talk about them with Brett Ciancia at the back end of the podcast. They are 6-0 ATS and have been absolutely dominant so far this year. Texas Tech is covering by over 10 points per game so far this year. So it's hard to get in front of that train. And will this be a John Mateer spot where you're facing a massive challenge in your conference and you know the drop-off from the backup to the starter is so significant, and Sam Levitt is just a guy who's going to try to gut it out? I don't know. We probably won't know until kick time down in Tempe, but just worth noting, we have seen the 10s all disappear and the number down around 7.5, 8 in favor of Texas Tech on the road against Arizona State. So something to monitor this week, the health of Sam Levitt and that foot, but he was practicing on Wednesday. So keep that in mind as the market moves there in the favor of the Sun Devils. Before we take a break, just a reminder, every VSiN College Football Betting Podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Rainbow Authentics. They're helping out Hawaii student athletes. They've got game-used apparel, autographs, trading cards, whatever you need. Boom, they have it. Basketball season right around the corner. There's some buzz regarding Hawaii in their final year in the Big West. But beyond memorabilia, Rainbow Authentics is also committed to supporting the community. Their mission is rooted in empowering student athletes and coaches, strengthening local programs, and giving back to Hawaii with pride. With exclusive gear like the hat I'm wearing right now, Rainbow Authentics also makes sure you look your very best every game day. So check them out, rainbowauthentics.com. Mahalo to our friends, Rainbow Authentics, a proud sponsor of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Quick break. When we come back, Wes Reynolds will join the program. Will he still have a big old smile on his face, fresh off of Indiana's 30-20 win over Oregon?
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, the man fresh off a visit to Autzen Stadium, where I imagine the smile has not been removed from his face yet. It is the one and only Wes Reynolds, as it is the award-winning, at least in my mind, Wednesdays with Wes. Mr. Reynolds, greatest Indiana sporting event you have attended, where did last Saturday rank for you?
It's in the top three. The greatest would be, of course, the AFC Championship when the Colts were down 21-3 at the half against the Patriots, and were able to pull that out and go to the Super Bowl and eventually win the first and the lone Super Bowl in Indianapolis. But man, it was pretty awesome. Just the whole experience, and everybody in Eugene, by the way. I got to give a quick shout out to the Oregon fans. They were absolutely cool. They were classy. They were not rude. You know, they showed us the respect. They showed us, they congratulated us, you know, hey, welcome to Autzen. Now they thought that they were going to win. And what the funniest thing was, Tim, being surrounded by the Oregon fans at Autzen on Saturday, is they thought that they were going to win, and then early on, Indiana, you know, got that sack at the beginning of the game. They got down 7-3 and then came back down and answered with the score. And the Oregon fans, I think they still thought they were going to win, but they're like, well, it's not going to be easy. So you could kind of see the stages there. And then you could see, okay, we're still good, we're still good. And then they were down at halftime. It's like, okay, there's going to be a fight to the end. And then when they were down at the end of the third quarter, and of course they do shout, with Animal House being filmed largely there at the University of Oregon and in the town of Eugene. And they do shout, notice day and the nights, and everybody is on the screen. So they're doing the normal ritual, but man, it didn't hit the same when you're down 20-13, because usually they're up like 31-7.
Yeah.
And they're beating the hell out of somebody. And they're all into it, and the place is loud. There was a sense of uneasiness there. And then all of a sudden, Fernando Mendoza did throw the pick six, and then the place did get kind of loud, because I was like, man, I expected this to be like super loud, and it wasn't, because there was some uneasiness and there were some nerves there, and rightfully so. But when Indiana gave up that pick six and then Fernando Mendoza just let them right down there and they answered with the score, you knew, okay, that was the final step for this team to take to be like a real national title contender, which I think at number three in the country, they absolutely are. Because they'd never done that. They'd never been in that close game against an elite team on the road. And then they answered with that score. And I just thought, you know what? We've got a real program here. Like, this is a real team. This is a real program and a really good program. And I'm just so proud to see that. And I'm enjoying the hell out of it because, Tim, we've had these discussions. I've sat in a half-empty Memorial Stadium in Bloomington, Indiana, and watched them lose at home to Southern Illinois. And watch them lose at home to Ball State. So I'm enjoying the absolute crap out of this. And
look, honestly, as you should.
And when I left the stadium, too, I wasn't really trash-talking either. It was just kind of like a quiet confidence as we were going out of that funeral procession that it seemed like out of Autzen Stadium, because they were stunned. They did not expect to lose to Indiana. And, you know, now number three in the country. It's all right there. And then to get the respect of the national media, too, on Monday, where it's like, we were wrong. We didn't get this right. We didn't expect this out of Indiana, and we got to give them credit. I was like, drink it in, Hoosier fans. Drink it in, because now they're coming home. Now they realize that this is a real program.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, yeah, I mean, you know, last week you were on it. Humans was on it. I didn't bet the game. I thought Oregon would win, but I did not want to lay the points. And, you know, I think the two things to me that jumped out, I guess there are more than that, but I think you hit it. Indiana responding on both of the big plays from Oregon told me this team is for real. When you think about the touchdown pass, the broken play to Malik Benson, 44-yard touchdown pass, what was the response? It was a touchdown drive, 9 plays, 75 yards to regain the lead. You give the pick six, the place is going nuts. Okay, here we go. This is where Oregon's going to get it. 12-play, 75-yard touchdown drive. So I think those two drives kind of hammered it home. Hey, this is for real. And, you know, once again, sometimes you see results and they're fluky. There was nothing fluky about Saturday. And I think that's where it kind of was eye-opening to me regarding this Indiana team. So moving forward, Wes, when you look at this Indiana team, the futures market has now adjusted considerably. They're minus 2,000 to make the playoff. They're minus 425 to make it to the quarterfinal. Well, because there's a really good chance that they're going to have a bye into the quarterfinals this year. They're plus 130 to make it to the semifinal. When you look at the futures market right now for Indiana, where they are sitting with the fourth shortest odds at DraftKings to win the title, 9-1. Yes, Wes Reynolds, your football program has the fourth shortest odds on October 15th to win the national title. Can't believe I'm saying those words. Where would you turn your attention from a future standpoint? By the way, to go undefeated this year, they're plus 105, minus 135 on the no, and that does not include the Big Ten championship game. So there's a lot of changing in the Indiana futures market. Where would you point your attention right now?
Well, I think barring a disaster, which would be, of course, an injury to Fernando Mendoza, I think that they've locked themselves in the playoff. I really do. You look at the schedule now. The fan in me and not the better in me is like, okay, one game at a time, you know, don't get too far ahead. But they have Michigan State for homecoming this weekend for the old brass platoon. Then they have UCLA. Then they go to Maryland. Then they go to Penn State. And obviously Penn State in a much different situation we thought they were going to be a few weeks ago with Drew Allard out. Now James Franklin has been let go. Wisconsin at home and then at Purdue. they're going to be favored in all six of those games. One of those teams is going to give Indiana a test because you just know, okay, they're just not going to steamroll everybody. That's just not the way college football works. They're going to get a scare in one of these six games. It might be Thanksgiving, the Friday after Thanksgiving on Black Friday up in West Lafayette against Purdue, because Purdue is going to put everything they can into stopping a potentially undefeated Indiana in the regular season. But I think they're going to make the playoff. I'm not willing to bet. I'm not getting enough, I think, on that undefeated price. Because you still got to go to Beaver Stadium. And, and I know Penn State is not Penn State, but that's still not an easy place to win. And Indiana hasn't won there. So they're going to make
West.
Go ahead, Tim.
And I'll jump in here, man. Who the hell knows about this UCLA team at this point? They look like a damn juggernaut.
I did not expect them to tear apart Michigan State like they did last week. And Michigan State's obviously hurting, and they got quarterback injuries. Indiana's almost a four-touchdown favorite. I don't know if I would necessarily lay it off maybe the biggest win in school history, certainly in the regular season. I don't know if I'd be rushing to do that. That being said, I think Sparty probably ripe to get beat down on Saturday, so that's going to be a stay away for me.
Yeah, as I do the situational spots every week, I mean, Indiana in a clear letdown spot, but Michigan State looks like an absolute disaster. And, you know, it's funny when you think back to some of the coaching hirings and, you know, your reaction to them. And, you know, certainly when Wisconsin, because I do a radio show there every day, I was elated that they hired Luke Fickell. I'm like, wow, what a coup that they were able to get Luke Fickell. Well, he's going to be fired at some point. They're an absolute train wreck. And then when Michigan State grabbed Jonathan Smith from Oregon State, I'm like, damn, that's a really good hire. Oh, Aiden Childs is going with them? Whoa, they're going to turn things around. Not so much. So, yeah, that was certainly on my list, Wes, of things to potentially you know, look to fade, but I can't do it. And Cignetti, I say this with all due respect, he's a bully, and he beats up when on the teams they're supposed to beat up on their 12-4 ATS as a favorite under Kirk Cignetti. I got to ask you this, because right now with the new rules, Indiana, not only Wes, is, I don't want to say lock, but they're in a really good shape to make the playoff, minus 2,000 to make the playoff. But because of the rule change, they're in good shape to make to have a first-round bye. I got to ask you, as an Indiana alum and super fan, are you a little like, man, kind of wish we could get a home game there for the Hoosiers?
Oh, certainly in Memorial Stadium, because Memorial Stadium, you know, seats about, I think, standing room only, it's probably 56,000, and we'll see if they're going to get an expansion. By the way, Autzen is just under 60,000, so not that much bigger. But, yeah, certainly I'd love to see a home game and see one of them SEC teams, or maybe a rematch with your Fighting Irish if they could go ahead and run the table, or one of these teams come in. I absolutely would love to see that. And everybody's already, by the way, kind of eyeballing, because I know our colleague Jensen Lewis at VSiN sent me a little tweet about, hey, by the way, December 6th, I think, is the date you not only have a Big Ten championship game where it would be, you know, potentially the Hoosiers against Jensen's Buckeyes, but you also have Indiana-Louisville in downtown Indianapolis for some hardwood action there. So big game for a day for Indiana athletics, but I'm superstitious, Tim. You know that about me as a better. I don't want to be like, you know, the moment I look ahead, they're going to get knocked off by somebody. So, you know, I worry about that a little bit. So let's just take care of Sparty and lock up that winning season this Saturday.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I didn't even put that together. So Lucas Oil, Indiana, Ohio State, in theory, and then was it earlier in the day?
Indiana-Louisville over at Gainbridge. And Louisville should be pretty darn good this year. And Indiana, Coach DeVries, his first year. I can't believe like college basketball is less than a month away, as I'm working on the betting guide right now for the Big Ten Conference, where Indiana probably smack dab in the middle, and then Boilermakers number one, as they should be.
Whew, yeah, that is a damn good program. All right, Wes, I love doing situational spots with you. We've got some angles we want to look at here. So I'll start with your list first. And Friday night I think you can be patient, and I know Matt and I will talk about this on the podcast on Thursday. You've got Miami and Louisville. Miami, all credit in the world. You know, I think after Indiana's win, I think Indiana now has the most impressive win of the year. But you could argue that Miami's collection of wins, even though the Florida State win is not aging well, Notre Dame, South Florida, Florida, and Florida State, pretty darn impressive. Now they've got Louisville, and after that, it's pretty smooth sailing for the Canes to an undefeated season. I've been a little disappointed so far this year by Louisville, but is this the spot where we've seen Jeff Brohm? You think back to that October night when Ohio State, number one in the country, walked into West Lafayette and got absolutely manhandled by Jeff Brohm's Purdue Boilermakers. Is this a spot to look at the Cardinals as a feisty dog on a Friday night?
I think it is, and we'll see if 14 reappears. It's pretty much 13.5 widespread across the market. I think the 14 on the opener, there was a few out there. Those got gobbled up. Louisville disappointed, you know, when they had Virginia coming off that field storm at Scott Stadium in Charlottesville over Florida State, yeah. And Louisville just couldn't get away from them. Virginia won in overtime, so Louisville was fighting for that respect because they weren't ranked, and they're still not getting it here. But you go to Miami, you're off a bye week, and there's a lot of kids on this Louisville roster, by the way, that are South Florida kids, especially in the Miami-Dade area. So this is always a big deal for them. You know, this is always a big deal to, you know, face the team that you probably grew up cheering for. Maybe you wanted to play for the U, and for whatever reason it didn't work out, whether it was you weren't recruited or you were a second option or NIL money or whatever it is. You know, a lot of these kids end up at Louisville. So this is a big deal. It's homecoming for these guys to go play the U. And now you're playing a Miami team that it's all right there for the U, too. They're the clear best team in the ACC. They're number two in the AP poll. So it's right there. But you're laying a big number with Mario Cristobal, and that could be very dangerous, even though I think his two coordinators have been amazing this year, Shannon Dawson and Corey Heatherman, who came in first year from Minnesota on the defensive side. Miami's really good. Don't get me wrong. They are really, really good. And we knew that from the opener against Notre Dame. It's like, man, they got some dudes. This is like the U of old, kind of. You know, it was the closest thing I'd seen to that, you know, since that Larry Coker early 2000s era. It's dangerous to go against this team, but you are getting inflated numbers. I think with all of these teams that are in the top five or so in the college football playoff, and I think the first official rankings are right around Halloween, I believe, in 2 weeks. And you're going to start to see these numbers get inflated, and you maybe are already starting to see it. So I thought if you could get an even two touchdowns here, Louisville's to play.
Yeah, and I think you'll get it back. I think the public's going to be on Miami. And those 14 showed up, I think, Tuesday morning. I was able to grab one. I can't remember if it was on Sunday or Monday, but they'll show up. If you're doing your homework, keeping your eye out, maybe on some of the air quotes squarer books, you'll probably get a 14 out there. So I'm with you. That is a play that I have made. I don't know if I can get there with you on the next one. I don't know where you're going, but knowing the way you bet, Wes, and the way I tend to bet, are you betting North Carolina at Cal on Friday night?
I am, and I have. I took 10.5. It's mostly 10 out there. And don't get me wrong, I'm scared about it. But, you know, we all know what has been going on down there in Chapel Hill. The rumors that, you know, Bill Belichick is looking to get that buyout, looking to get that exit. It obviously has not gone very well, and all the negative publicity. You know, and it's a national story, too, because of Bill Belichick's Hall of Fame career in the NFL. It is a national story, and they've just been getting crapped on for the last couple weeks after that beatdown they suffered at home at the hands of Clemson. But off a bye week against a Cal team that has been kind of erratic this year, you know, the freshman quarterback there, it's like he really opened some eyes, I think, early in the season. They started out 3-0. Then they get shut out at San Diego State. Then they have to go across the country in a terrible spot, and they beat BC. Now, that's turned out to be a not very good BC team. And then they get blown out of home by Duke, who had been a disappointment early in the season. So they're off a bye week as well. I just think with this projected low-scoring game, and 47 is pretty much the market aggregate on the total, you've got a Cal team with this quarterback that's been very solid, but the running game necessarily hasn't been there, I think, for the Bears. And, you know, Belichick is always going to be a defense-first guy. So I think defensively they can do enough to hang in here. Now, in terms of the quarterback play, that's what you worry about with North Carolina. This offense has been absolutely dreadful for these guys. Doesn't look like Lopez is going to go, so it would be Max Johnson that would start. I just thought that this was a little rich for Cal. And maybe it's good for Carolina to get as far away from Chapel Hill as possible and go on the road and go to Berkeley and face Cal. I thought over double digits was a little much here, even though you are taking a team that you worry, okay, are these kids kind of starting to think about where they're going to end up next year, where they're going to transfer to, or what's going to happen here? I don't think we've reached quite that point yet. So I'm in on Bill Belichick and the North Carolina Tar Heels this week.
10:30 on ESPN. That's the Friday night game. ACC, classic ACC rivalry, North Carolina at Cal. And another classic rivalry. You know, you talked about the spittoon that Indiana's playing for this week?
Yes, the old brass spittoon.
I don't know what trophy they're going to be playing for in... Yeah, I don't know what trophy, Wes, they're going to be playing for in Palo Alto as another classic rivalry. Florida State at Stanford, 10:30 on ESPN. Numbers 18.5 at the Westgate Superbook. Florida State laying a big old number. And I think you got to ask yourself a similar question. Where are the heads at for this Florida State program? They're now 0-3 in the ACC. They're not going to make the playoff. And you think about the range of emotions for this Florida State program where they're 1-0, they beat Alabama, they're top five in the country, and now they're 0-3 in the ACC and they got to travel out to sleepy Palo Alto. So I don't know if you've gotten to the window yet, but late night with the Cardinal, could you be looking at Stanford here as a big home dog?
I'm going to wait on it because I do think that some are going to look at Florida State like this, the get right spot, right? You know, go on the road to Stanford and, you know, kind of turn around your season. But yeah, this went sideways quickly. They lost to Virginia and then they lose to the U at home. And then the loss to Pittsburgh at home, I think, was very surprising last week, even though they were only 10-point favorites. And now you're getting a Stanford team that's in absolute rebuild mode. Frank Reich now out there as the head coach. They just got beat 34-10 pretty easily at SMU, even though they do have two wins, beat BC, beat San Jose State. But I can't lay Florida State in this spot. It would be Stanford or nothing here. And I know Stanford down on talent, and they're trying to get that turned around. Andrew Luck is the GM. Apparently, they got this big $50 million donation, so that's certainly going to help. I don't believe it was our buddy Stanford Steve. But Stanford Steve is very generous with college game day passes. So thank you, Stanford Steve Coughlin, for providing that for me and a friend for college game day on Saturday. That was a great experience. But I don't know if he's quite that generous to give $50 million, but somebody's doing it to Stanford. So that's going to help their program. I can't lay it with Florida State here. I just think traveling all the way across the country late Saturday night, not for me, even though I think this Stanford team is still very much down on talent.
Yeah. Also, shout out to Stanford Steve giving our guy Matoy Pearson a little love.
He did. Big Mo in Vegas. Big Mo was engaged with that Lamar in East Texas A&M, where the quick track, the gas station right outside that stadium. That was that was an all-timer, Tim. That was an all-timer. I am glad I did not have that, but I think our buddy Big Mo may have been somewhat involved in that game.
I texted him and I said, "Are you Big Mo?" And he goes, "Yep, my phone is blowing up right now." Just unbelievable. All-timer. And look, you know, they don't need our kudos. The internet has already done it. But Van Pelt and Stanford Steve, that segment is just the – might be the best segment on television. And the way they deliver it, just incredible. And it makes the beat, I guess, feel that much better, I guess, if you will, for our guy Matoy, as that was absolutely brutal. All right, let's – you know, this number is pretty fascinating because obviously, as you and all our listeners know, I'm a Notre Dame guy, and a lot of people have been hitting me up. Hey, this number is way too high. Why is it this high? What's going on here? And I'll just say Circa's been hanging out at 10 for like 48 hours and it has not budged. So it's sometimes a tell. So we'll see how Saturday night plays out. Early betting splits have 68% of bets on USC at DraftKings, which, you know, you always want to beware of the public dog, as our friend Chris Felica always says. But the total 61.5 in this one, and you and I were at the Coliseum a year ago. Were you at that game last year?
I was not at the Notre Dame game last year. I usually go to the Coliseum once a year with our buddy Andy Miranda, but was not there last year.
Well, I brought that game up because, Wes, obviously that was a shootout. And 49-35, a bit of a bad beat for those who had USC in that spot with two pick sixes. But you look at both of these offenses are both fantastic. The Notre Dame defense might be waking up a little bit here. We'll see how Saturday unfolds. But what's your angle on Notre Dame-USC on Saturday night in South Bend?
Yeah, I had the Trojans last week on the money line against Michigan, and a pretty easy win, I thought. And then put up almost 500 on what is, I think, a pretty solid Michigan defense even still. Even though if you talk to Wolverine fans, they want to get rid of Wink Martindale tomorrow. But, you know, oh, how the mighty fall in like 1 year. But yeah, USC's offense is very dynamic. Now, they're going to be a little bit shorthanded at running back. They had a couple go down, by the way, on Saturday. But I think they got some depth. King Miller, who is the third teamer, 18 for 158 and a touchdown. So I think USC still has some depth at that position. So it may not hurt as much as meets the eye. But I don't know what I'm going to do for a side here, but I might look at the square side. I have not bet this. It looks like the square side because it's the obvious side. I can't get there on the under here, even though Notre Dame's defense is starting to show some sign. Very nice performance, by the way, Saturday against NC State. But, man, this is a really explosive USC offense, even with banged up backfield. I can't see this being anything other than a shootout unless the weather, which certainly could be the great equalizer, but I think we're getting a lot of points Saturday night on NBC.
Yeah, and I'm sure they would be okay with it too, Wes, to get a shootout there leading into a little Saturday Night Live. I'm sure that would be just fine with the executives there at the Peacock Network. So, yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I'm sure I'll be chewing my fingernails, even though going into that one as very important for Notre Dame to take care of business. They lose, they're out for sure. USC loses, they still got some wiggle room to make it into the playoff. A couple of other spots before I wanted to let you run. Purdue at Northwestern. You know, we talked about this game a little bit earlier. I think this is a tricky spot for Northwestern coming off of the win over Penn State. I think Circa had them as a 21-point underdog. They go into Happy Valley. They get that victory. Now you're laying 3.5 against a Purdue team that, you know, I do feel like this is a capable bunch. We saw them cover last week, probably should have got the outright win against Minnesota. Is this a letdown spot for Northwestern on the banks of Lake Michigan there in one of the more scenic arenas or stadiums in college football?
Yeah, it was kind of rotten beat for Purdue. I thought Purdue was the much better side, by the way, against the Golden Gophers, and then they got that pick six late that Ryan Brown threw and end up losing 27-20. This Purdue team, I think they're still a little down on talent. It's Barry Odom's first year, of course, coming in from UNLV, but they've been competitive. I will give them credit. They haven't covered every game or anything like that, but they've been competing. They haven't embarrassed themselves, I think, really at all this year. And now you're getting a Northwestern team that shocks the world and upsets Penn State. You know, people are like, no way Penn State's going to lose to Northwestern. Northwestern might not even get like 10 points. And they end up getting the outright win as 3-touchdown underdogs. So now a little bit of a role reversal, even though Northwestern's been favored a couple times in non-conference, and then they certainly were against UCLA. I like the Boilermakers here. I think that they're still trying. I don't think that they're going to let one loss necessarily get them down. This is a program that obviously did a lot of losing last year, only won one game overall. So I thought Purdue getting 3 in the hook and what might be a low-scoring game, 47 on the total, was probably the right play here. Not much of a travel, obviously, going from West Lafayette to Evanston. So, boiler up. You won't hear me say that very often, but we'll be doing that on Saturday.
Yeah. And Brad Powers, by the way, on VSiN Primetime last night, gave out Purdue as his favorite play of the week. So a lot of us are going to be boiling up at Northwestern in a little bit of a letdown spot. All right, before I let you run, I wanted to throw a situation your way. What do we make of the two teams off of Red River? We've got Texas laying 13 at Kentucky. Shout out to Stormy. She'll be at this one. This will be the Stormy game of the week. And then Oklahoma laying 5.5 in what I deem a pretty big sandwich spot here for the Sooners off of Red River. Next week, they host Ole Miss. It is revenge. Remember, Oklahoma got smoked by South Carolina a year ago. What do you make of the two teams off of Red River from last week?
Jesus, Mary and Joseph, Tim. I got to go from the Boilermakers to the Kentucky Wildcats, man. You're killing me here. But I did bet both of those Hoosier rivals. I did bet the Kentucky Wildcats getting 13 against Texas. I just wonder, and I don't want to discredit Texas for Red River because I thought that defense was terrific against Oklahoma. Now, they got a John Mateer that I don't think was 100%. And I think you could see it, you know, watching the game or watching the highlights as I had to over the weekend. And now they're going to a Kentucky team that I think still has a pretty good defense. Offense, you know, a little bit shaky, but it does remind me maybe a little bit of Ole Miss, where Ole Miss was actually, I think they were laying 10, I believe, and Kentucky did end up getting the cover late. It's going to be tough, I think, for Texas to get margin here at a total of 42.5. And I thought Arch was just, he was kind of okay. He was very efficient, you know, wasn't spectacular in Red River, but, you know, maybe he's not going to give you spectacular until potentially next year. But I thought that was a little rich for Texas. So I did take Kentucky. Have not done anything yet with Oklahoma and South Carolina, who, you know, by the way, and maybe they were a little bit overrated, but South Carolina's got to be the biggest disappointment, I think, in the SEC. There was a lot of expectations this year around this team with Lenora Sellers, and then they got some injuries. They won that opener, of course, against Virginia Tech. And now all of a sudden to see the Gamecocks at 3-3, I think is a little bit of a surprise, even though maybe they were ranked a little bit too high for top 10. But losing to Vandy, losing at Mizzou, and then losing at LSU, I guess that's the grind of the SEC, though.
Yeah.
Ugh. I don't know what I'm doing with this one yet. I would lean a little bit South Carolina at 5.5, but, you know, we'll see if John Mateer is a little bit better. Was not great last week. Poor performance, and then plus I still think the lingering effects of the injury through those three picks. So could be bounce back for Oklahoma, but I still think that's a little rich on the road.
Wes, I know that smile won't go away for quite some time. Always appreciate it, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me, as always.
There he is, Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds 1. Quick break. Brett Ciancia, Pick 6 Previews, joins us next.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
All right, we continue on the podcast, welcoming in Brett Ciancia from Pick 6 Previews. Follow him on Twitter at that name. And also check out Pick 6 Plus, pick6previews.com/plus. What we like to do, Brett, is we like to digest Week 7 a little bit before looking ahead. And boy, no bigger and more impressive results, certainly, than what we saw from Indiana against Illinois. And in your game grader, you still have Indiana's win over Illinois as the most impressive result of the year. But what do you make of this performance, or what did your numbers make of the performance of Indiana out in Oregon?
Yeah, statement victory for Kurt Cignetti. And while we have the Indiana-Illinois as the most dominant game grade, I think this win over Oregon is the most impressive, the biggest resume boost that they've had at Indiana. You know, we've seen it grow the last, year and a half with Kurt Cignetti. First, they were blowing out the below-average teams. Then they blew out the average teams. This year, they blew out Illinois, who was ranked. But still, we hadn't tested them against the top five or top 10 caliber teams like they failed last year against Ohio State and Notre Dame. So going into Autzen Stadium, a top five team, and then winning by 10. And really, I think the score was a little misleading. They dominated that game. Take out that pick six by Oregon. really a one-sided game. So, yeah, that was one of the last checks off the checkbox for this Indiana program resurgence. Can they go into and beat a top-five team? The answer is yes. So I think you put Cignetti's Indiana turnaround along with like a Bill Snyder, Kansas State, Barry Alvarez at Wisconsin, maybe Mike Leach, Texas Tech, in terms of biggest program turnarounds that we've ever seen. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, looking at some of your numbers and how you break teams down, this Indiana team, very well balanced. You look at your game graders for this year, you have Indiana third in offense, fourth in defense, and overall in your game grades now up to number four. So how much has this team moved up the ratings for you as the season has gone on?
They have skyrocketed. In the preview magazine, I had them about 20th. I thought that was a fair entry point. But they've surged all the way into the top five. And like you said, the balance, that's what stands out to me. Only five teams are in the top 20 of both my offense and my defense numbers. That's actually Notre Dame, Alabama, Texas Tech, A&M, and Indiana. That's top 20 in both. Indiana's the only one that's top 10 in both, and they're top five in both. So they are really getting it done both sides of the ball. Very dominant. I don't see any weakness. Great coordinators, and they're not going to have any letdown spots, too. And their biggest hurdles coming in were Oregon, Illinois, and Penn State. So far, they beat Illinois by 53. They beat Oregon by 10 in Autzen, and now Penn State doesn't have a coach. So Indiana's path to the playoff and the path to Indianapolis for the title game are looking really sharp right now.
Well, for those of you watching with us on YouTube, I always reference it. I have a little FOMO. I love the fall back east where I grew up in Maryland, went to college in Pennsylvania, and Brett lives in PA. So the sun is shining. It's beautiful fall weather, but James Franklin, boy, what a flip here. And we've talked about it all week here on the podcast, but curious to get your thoughts on James Franklin and the decision by Penn State after back-to-back losses as 20-plus point favorites, three straight losses going back to the Oregon game. James Franklin, this team was on the cusp of a national championship appearance this January. I mean, this calendar year, and now James Franklin is out.
Yeah, well, I think coming into this season, it had an all-in feel to it. I mean, they gave him all the resources possible. They hired two of the best coordinators in football, including Jim Knowles stealing him from Ohio State for $3 million. All the NIL money for transfers. They attacked their weakness at receiver in the portal. They even winterized their stadium for playoff games. I mean, they really invested heavy into this season. And to come up short, not just the Oregon game, but that three-week stretch, the back-to-back upset losses to UCLA, Northwestern. You know, and athletic director Pat Kraft, he says he wasn't fired because of a three-week span. I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, this was a 12-year tenure. It was always above average. And I think when you're that long and that, you know, not in the national title hunt, it starts to catch up to you. So I liken this to a Mark Richt situation in Georgia, where they were always top 10, always top 15, couldn't get past the SEC title, couldn't get in the BCS national title. Similar feel here, and sometimes you just need a clean split for both sides. For Georgia, it worked out with Mark Richt. They bring in Kirby Smart. But I went back and researched this too, how rare it is to have a 700 win percentage coach fired at his school. Only nine I came up with, and it's some names like Phil Fulmer, the Nebraska guys, Frank Solich, Bo Pelini, Les Miles, and Eddie Ogeron. So it's really rare, and only about half turn out for the good. So we'll see where Penn State goes. It could go up or down from here. The grass isn't always greener. But yeah, to answer your question, it was an all-in season. It clearly wasn't going to work out, and I think they're ready just for a new era at Penn State.
Well, when you go grocery shopping at Wegmans, what's the word on the street? Who do people want there in Penn State? I mean, I'm sure they want, you know, the reincarnation of Vince Lombardi or something like that. But who are the pie in the sky wish list, and who do you think is a realistic shot for Penn State to land?
Yeah, you're right. The morale is so down over here. I mean, the Eagles falling off the top of the NFL, the Phillies coming up short in the playoffs in Red October again. Now this Penn State meltdown, it's brutal. Yeah, talking to Penn Staters, they all want Cignetti. That's their guy. And I don't know if that's timing based off him just beating Oregon or if they've been thinking about this for a while, but that seems to be the top realistic target. I mean, you hear guys say Saban. Okay, Nick Saban's not going to to come out of retirement to coach Penn State. It's not happening. But I think Cignetti is the top of their board. You hear Matt Rhule just because of the Penn State connection. He's an alum there. He played there. He's friends with Pat Kraft, the AD. So you don't ever know how much that goes into it. But I think if you're Penn State, you start with Cignetti. You look at other guys that have had success at Penn State. Manny Diaz, he was a coordinator under Franklin for a year, and he's turned around Duke, got them playing really good football. And then maybe you go coordinator. I mean, Will Stein in Oregon has been phenomenal. You could go a lot of different ways if you go with a coordinator. So anyways, they say Cignetti or Rhule, but we'll see about that. I think Cignetti likes his spot, his role at Indiana. I think he likes being the, you know, the chip on the shoulder kind of guy.
Yeah, the tricky part about Cignetti, and I heard Stanford Steve make this comment on Greg McElroy's podcast, and it's so true. I mean, Indiana seems like they're on a collision course to the quarterfinals, and Cignetti doesn't seem like the type of guy that would bail on his team in the playoff. So I would imagine Penn State not going to be able to wait around. Now, you look at the ties geographically. He's from Pittsburgh, coached at Pittsburgh, was the head coach at Indiana University of Pennsylvania, which is, I think, like an hour and a half away from Happy Valley. So there's certainly PA ties, so we'll see. But yeah, I think to your point, I think Cignetti could be a tricky one to pull. But hey, I think right now that's the guy that you would certainly want to go after. Doesn't look like Alabama is going to be having that vacancy as many anticipated after week one. And I think that lady down in Tuscaloosa who said if she won the Mega Millions, she would buy out Kalen DeBoer. Now things are rolling, and you know, we can pat ourselves on the back a little bit here because we said, let's pump the brakes. It was disappointing week one, but now they're rocking and rolling. And when you look at the betting odds to make the college football playoff, Alabama is only behind Indiana and Miami for the shortest odds to make the playoff. They're minus 425. So a nice win for Alabama. This is a really rough stretch where you're at Georgia, home to Vandy in a revenge spot, at Mizzou, and now you get an opportunity to get another thing of revenge as you welcome in Tennessee on Saturday.
Yeah, what a stretch for Alabama, and I agree with you. I'm glad we held on to those over 9.5 tickets from the summer. You know, it looked bleak against Florida State, but they're rounding into form here. Just phenomenal football again by Ty Simpson, a quarterback playing flawless. 16 touchdowns, one pick. He's number one in the SEC in QB rating. Just always makes the correct decision with the ball. That's really elevated this team. And then you got the defense is improving a bit. But with this matchup with Tennessee, I really like Alabama. I know it is such an emotional stretch here, four straight ranked games. But looking at Tennessee, they've had a lot of close games. You know, against Mississippi State, they won in overtime. They survived that one. Last week against Arkansas, a coachless Arkansas, only a three-point win. So, you know, a little margin of victory I'm concerned about with them against the lower tier teams. You know, Bama's had close games against Georgia and a strong Vandy and a strong Missouri. So contrasting styles, too. You have the fastest team in America in terms of pace with Tennessee against one of the slowest with Alabama. We'll see what happens there. But I do like Alabama to win this. They're not going to overlook Tennessee in the cigar game in Tuscaloosa. So I like Alabama here.
All right, one of the better rivalries in the sport is the Holy War, and we get that this week. It's BYU and Utah, and I know you do some work for some folks out in the Salt Lake area, so I imagine your eyes are very fixated on this game. BYU's undefeated. I do think there's a little fool's gold in there with the Cougars, but I tried to go against them last week. It did not work out well, losing in double overtime, Arizona losing in double overtime. Revenge, certainly, for Utah. Crazy game a year ago. Very questionable late, you know, calls in that contest. Utah right now, a three and a half point favorite. We'll call them 3.5 points favorite here against BYU. Total sitting at 49 for this game. What jumps out to you in your numbers with Utah and BYU on Saturday night?
Yeah, there's a lot here. I mean, first off, I'm glad that Big Noon Kickoff has given them the national treatment. This is a really big rivalry, really bitter. You know, these two are at it all 365 days a year. I see it on Twitter. I see it from writing with KSL.com. They're crazy out there. So you got families divided. You got Whittingham, like, played for the other one, coached for the other one. They're all intertwined. So this one's huge. Now, you have two transfer quarterbacks that have really popped off the screen. I mean, Devin Dampier for Utah, probably the most elusive quarterback in the country in terms of pocket evasiveness. You can't get a finger on this guy. It's great offensive line play, too, arguably the best in the country. But he at quarterback is like, you got to watch this guy. It's like a highlight reel. Arizona State came in last week. They were number 4 in sacks in the country. They didn't lay a finger on him the entire game. So that goes to show you. And, yeah, I like Utah to win it. I like them to cover the 3.5. You're right about BYU as a little bit of fool's gold undefeated. Now, you know, they've won their games, but they were close against Colorado. I think that game was a 50-50 game. Needed a comeback against Arizona, a really gutsy performance. So you don't want to discount that they did win the games, but these are not the types of margins that Utah has shown off. I think that Texas Tech blowing out Utah in the fourth quarter has almost discounted them in the market. I think that's being weighed too heavily on Utah. Let's just imagine if BYU played Texas Tech, would their numbers be shifted down? I think so. So, you know, I don't want to say throw that game out, but I think Utah's a better team. And this is going to go a long way for second place in the Big 12 race. So it could be the biggest holy war of all time, honestly. So I'm going to go Utah to cover it. I like them here. I will say Bear Bachmeyer, a do-it-all quarterback for BYU, he would not be denied Saturday. He's reminding me of Colin Klein. You remember him from Kansas State?
Oh, yeah.
Shouldered a ton of carries there, and Bachmeyer is doing the same. So, you know, he's gutsy, but I'm going to go with Utah as a better overall team.
You know, you mentioned Texas Tech, and this is a team that continues to be very impressive. When you look at ATS standing so far, they're 6-0 against the spread so far this year. And amongst teams that are unbeaten against the spread, it's a small fraternity. It's Memphis 6-0, it's Texas Tech 6-0, and Ohio State 5-0-1 so far this year. Seeing the market come in on Arizona State, and this is injury related, as we're recording this on Wednesday, Sam Levitt has been seen at practice, no wrap on the ankle. So Arizona State hoping to get their quarterback back. And as you alluded to, I mean, just a completely different team when they have Sam Levitt as opposed to Jeff Sims. So the number's down to 7.5. We'll see if it continues to fall here. But Texas Tech has been an absolute machine so far. They're on the road. They're at Arizona State. How healthy is Sam Levitt? Certainly the big question there. But as your numbers have continued to compile over the year, how favorable are they on this Texas Tech team?
Yeah, I mean, they're heavy on Texas Tech, the numbers. I love it. At full strength, which Game Grader, the formula that just looks at full strength, it's got Texas Tech by 12. So I really like this one. You know, with Sam Levitt, I'm concerned because you hear quotes from practice. And last week, it sounded like he wasn't mobile at all. He couldn't move around, really. This week at practice, they say he is a bit mobile. But that's his best part of his game, I think, is his legs. The way he's able to scramble and break down defenses on third and long, the way he's done that all season. So if there's any kind of limitations on that, if he's cramped into that pocket all game, that really hurts the offense. And, you know, their backup, Jeff Sims, we've seen him for 5-6 years in college football. The one constant, his jersey, his helmet keeps changing in different schools, but the one constant is the turnovers. He's a turnover machine. He probably has more turnovers than touchdowns if you look at his career. So I expect if he plays, Texas Tech's going to blow him out. If Sam Levitt is healthy, I think it'll still be a Texas Tech win. Now, Texas Tech has a quarterback issue as well. Baron Morton left his third game out of six with injury, and he's questionable day to day. I think he'll play, but and Will Hammond is getting a lot of experience behind him. I'm just going to keep going with Texas Tech. Until they show me otherwise, you got to ride this train. They're statistically dominant. They are the team in the Big 12.
Hard to blame you when a team is 6-0 ATS. My brain always looks to fade the team that is unblemished and try to figure out when we're going to get, you know, an inflated number. It is worth noting, by the way, a reporter at the Cronkite School of Journalism there took a picture, and a lot of pictures are surfacing. He said, Sun Devil Athletics is allowing media to take photos of Sam, but not videos. Interesting note there. No wrap on the foot, but we'll see if that mobility is going to be a key for him. You know, you added something, and what I love about the Pick Six Plus is you keep adding different new wrinkles and you're trying different things out. And, you know, one thing that's missing in college football is, you know, the way that we see, you know, these KenPom numbers, the, you know, things like that in college basketball. Now you look at this situation that you've added some tempo. So TCU Baylor, fast on fast here, the total sitting at 66.
Yeah, I added in some pace of play numbers there for not just the bettors, but just for informational. I mean, you want to get a snapshot of what these games are going to look like. So, in addition to all the advanced stats and Game Grader and all that, you get to see the paces of play for both teams. And, Yeah, when the top 10 fast offenses play against the top 10 fast, when you have fast versus fast, it's 3-0 to the over. And it's a small sample size, but they have all gone way over their point total. So I think with BYU-TCU, you see a 2010s Big 12 game here. I think it's two really strong passing offenses. Sawyer Robertson, one of the best in the country, lighting it up. I think at one point he was averaging 400 a game. It's an incredible performance. Trigg, their big tight end, is unstoppable. So I think you have a great offense with Baylor. Same with TCU, with Josh Hoover. Eric McAllister, his stat line, it looks like Madden. I mean, it's like 30 or 40 yards a catch. It's unbelievable. So I think you have two really strong offenses. I will say, in terms of defense, Baylor has to clean it up. They're one of the worst in the country. So in this game, you got two elite offenses, one average defense TCU, one poor defense Baylor. So I'll go with TCU here to cover that field goal spread, and probably it's going to go over. I mean, it's too fast, you know, fast on fast, so we're going to go over.
All right, a game that also has a pretty high total, Notre Dame and USC. We talked about this briefly with Wes Reynolds prior to welcoming you on the program here. Very impressive performance last week from USC, and your game grader actually really liked the performance from Notre Dame as well. I thought it was a bit sluggish at the beginning, but I think for sure for Notre Dame, their best defensive performance of the year against NC State. You graded them out as the top grade of the week, 102 in their win over NC State. So it's interesting to note the last four games, which Notre Dame is 4-0 in, they lost their first two games of the year. You have Notre Dame's game grade as the second best in the country. So they are playing good football, albeit against lesser competition than Texas A&M and Miami. What do you make of this one here on Saturday night in South Bend? We know historically Lincoln Riley has struggled traveling from L.A. out to the Midwest. Weather, I think, could rain a little bit, but I don't think it's expected to be very cold, which is beneficial for the USC Trojans. What do you make of this game where Notre Dame right now around a 9.5, even a 10-point favorite at some shops?
Yeah, well, I think with Notre Dame, I think the nation watched them in back-to-back weeks to open the season. They lost two heartbreakers there, two really coin flip games. But I think you know, the perception of them after those two games was this defense needs a lot of help. Chris Ash might be in over his head, and CJ Carr, he's a freshman or, you know, a first-time starter. We'll see how he develops. But they've been out of the spotlight because of those two losses. And if you haven't really been paying attention, Notre Dame has answered both those questions, and they're playing elite football both sides of the ball. CJ Carr, since that point, he's coming in a top five quarterback rating in the country, 10 touchdowns to one pick since then. And then the defense, looking at first three games versus the last three games, they were bottom 20 in my numbers on defense. Last three games, top five. So, like, if you stop watching them in early September, you're probably thinking USC is going to blow this team out. But if you've been paying attention, Notre Dame's for real. So advanced stats, everything looks like Notre Dame here. USC, to their point, to their credit, they earned back some trust last week. I was skeptical seeing them go against a physical Michigan team, and they looked fast. They were, you know, 7 yards per play is the worst that Michigan allowed in 4 years. So they answered that call. I don't know about back-to-back weeks. So I like Notre Dame to win it here. 10 points seems high, though, Tim. I don't know about that, but, you know, so kind of a mixed answer here. But I think Notre Dame's going to win it. But 10 seems too high to me.
Yeah, it is one of those numbers that makes you scratch your chin a little bit. And what does somebody know that we don't know? Because that's kind of been the reaction when I put out on Twitter earlier this week that Circa, believed to be the sharpest book in the world, went to 10. They're the only 10 out there. And if that thing's going to get scooped up, it would have got scooped up by now. So it's kind of interesting to see how that's played out. Early betting splits over on our betting splits at VSiN.com do have 68% of tickets on USC. How about this little nugget? The Trojans will be looking to end a 10-game road losing streak versus AP-ranked teams in games outside of the state of California. USC 0-5 in such games under Lincoln Riley. So we'll see how it plays out on Saturday night. I don't think it's an elimination game for USC, but I know it's an elimination game for Notre Dame. So yeah, a little bit more on the line maybe for the Irish. And you also sprinkle in the Lincoln Riley not really wanting to play Notre Dame anymore and Marcus Freeman. So you got a little bit of added motivation there. So we'll see how that all plays out. All right, one final game. So I talked about this game in the open. I'm a big situational guy, Brett. Now, I think there's a unique aspect to Oklahoma, South Carolina. I think from a situation standpoint, Oklahoma coming off of the Texas game, Ole Miss on deck, screams kind of a sandwich spot here for the Sooners. That said, there is also the revenge angle because South Carolina went to Norman last year and beat up this Oklahoma team 35-9. I think your numbers are high on the Sooners here as the market sits at 5.5 in favor of Oklahoma on the road at South Carolina.
Yeah, I really like Oklahoma here. It's more a anti-South Carolina. I'm really fading them hard here. It's just I'm not impressed with them. This was a team that was hyped up in the AP top 10, top 15 coming in. I had them like 35th in the preview magazine. And, you know, to their credit, they do really well with defensive touchdowns and special teams and special team scores. It's that old Beamer ball. And, you know, I know that's by design, but I don't know how sustainable that is, predictability week to week. I just don't see it continuing. And then their offense is just broken down. Outside of one long run last week, they were held to like 2 yards of play against LSU. Another misleading box score, too, because LSU won that 20-10. They had two turnovers right at the goal line. It could have been, 14 more. It could have been 34-10. Or 30-10, something like that. And looking at Carolina's lineup here, they were just off a road trip to LSU. They now have Oklahoma. They're looking ahead to Bama and Ole Miss and then A&M. It's just like it's just another week in the SEC for these teams. So they're all in these kind of situational spots. But Oklahoma, I was glad to see Mateer back. He did force that throw near halftime. That might have flipped the momentum of the game. But I still think, I think you have a better defense with Oklahoma and you have a better offense with Oklahoma in this matchup. So I like them by more than that 5 points. I'm going to go Oklahoma by 8, 9, 10 points, something like that.
All right. We will. I don't know if we'll go head to head yet. I haven't decided how I'm going to attack that game. Situationally, scream South Carolina, but I don't know how South Carolina's scoring against that Oklahoma defense. Maybe I'll go under and we can both try to win this one. Oklahoma can win like 20-3. That would work out.
Carolina just fired their offensive line coach too, so they are in a, they're not sure what's going on there either. So I like your under. That's a good point.
All right, Brett, you've got some new wrinkles to Pick 6 Plus, and let folks know how they can acquire Pick 6 Plus.
Yeah, thanks so much. It's pick6previews.com, Pick 6 Previews on Twitter. And you're familiar with the Preview Magazine, 14th annual edition this year, but now a weekly stats and information package coming out every Tuesday, hits your email inbox, all 68 Power 4 teams. I've got everything in there. I mean, my game grader formula, my game projections, line projections, advanced stats, talent profiles, situational splits, everything you'd want to see, and now some pace of play factored in. But game logs, everything you could look for. I have a sample up there on pick6previews.com. Just look at Pick 6 Plus. And if you sign up today or throughout the week, I'll still get you yesterday's edition, of course, and a couple back editions as well. So, thanks for checking it out. pick6previews.com.
Brett, always appreciate it, man, and we'll talk next week.
All right, Tim. Good luck with USC there for your Irish.
Ooh. We'll be sweating that one out, as we always do in that rivalry. That's Brett Ciancia. Thanks to Wes Reynolds. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our two producers for this program. Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And also, each week, we're up on YouTube as well. That's going to do it for this podcast. Back on Thursday as we break down the Week 8 card. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.